This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Daily Digest. I'm T. Shao Ik with Lim Soo Ann and Shamila Gunnison. This hour, we are continuing to bring you discussions related to what's happening on the political front. And, you know, all this bickering does frustrate all of us, doesn't it? So yesterday afternoon, in the midst of all of these developments, we got our first inkling about the fate of the cabinet in a tweet from then-Minister of Health, Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad. So he tweeted about, first, the recovery of two more patients from the COVID infections. And then he ended it with tweet saya terakhir sebagai YB Menteri Kesihatan. Terima kasih.
Oh, There were several other emotional posts from other ministers as well. And also in the same vein, for instance, Agriculture Minister Salahuddin Ayub posted an apology to the farmers and fishermen for not being able to do more for them, although he had tried to fight for their rights in the last year and 8 months.
Mm. Yeah, and Deputy Minister of Women of Women, Health and Community Development, Hannah Yeo, a former deputy minister, actually, also posted about how, quote unquote, the season has come to an end for now. She also said that her ministry is in good hands. Mm.
So we'll be taking a look at one particular portfolio now, which is the Ministry of Health, to get an idea of how all this political upheaval could potentially affect civil sector services. Mm. I mean, you know, the Director General of Health, Dato' Sri Dr. Noor Hisham Abdullah, has reassured that his ministry's efforts will not be affected, as it is a technical ministry. They have all the available experts still doing their jobs. And, you know, okay, this is true. The civil sector should, in theory, continue with business as usual. But in reality, you know, how does the change in political leadership affect ministries in their work? And particularly if it would be a change from a reformist government, to one that has a very different agenda. Mm-hmm. So earlier, I turned to Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, with this question.
Well, I think it's first and foremost important for us to recognize that Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad actually has set a very high bar or standard to be expected from a Minister of Health. When you consider what he has been able to achieve and do within just the 2 years of his tenure, you know, you can imagine what he could do with another 2 or 3 years. And this is very important for us to recognize, because that's what political leadership can actually do to provide that motivation and initiative, and most importantly, the commitment to initiate much-needed reforms, which, though can be proposed by the civil service, requires buy-in, support, and most importantly, ownership by the political leadership. So when you consider what has been able to be achieved within just 2 years, through leadership that was provided by Dr. Zul, it's something to recognize that this is something that we need there to be, which is consistency and, most importantly, firm a strength in the leadership of this particular ministry. So we can say it's business as usual in the sense that our healthcare systems are working as they should in any normal sense, but when it comes to much-needed urgent reforms, this requires political leadership.
Can you tell us specifically what kind of reforms were already on the table under Dr. Zul and that we should not lose sight of?
Well, you know, Dr. Zul was quite progressive in looking at tackling some of the sacred cows, but also much more difficult issues that were left untended to by his predecessors, especially urgent yet difficult conversations regarding, for example, firstly, the integration of our healthcare system, looking at Malaysian healthcare as a whole rather than two halves, public and private sector, which tended to be looked at as competing against each other. One of the examples of that kind of thinking and approach was the introduction of the PERCA B40 initiative, which was introduced under his leadership, which requires a much more holistic look at how we consider our healthcare system to be. Secondly, he was looking at introducing healthcare financing reforms, which are considered a live wire issue to introduce sustainable long-term solutions to ensure that our healthcare needs are able to be funded and supported. At the end of the day, though a lot of Malaysians like to think of it, Malaysian healthcare costs are not one ringgit. Mm-hmm. They require billions of ringgit in funding in order to sustain what we have today. Thirdly, what has been revealed late last year was Dr. Zhou was on the cusp of revealing the findings from the inquiry which investigated the hospital Sultanah Aminah fire, which killed six people in 2016. This is a report that has not yet made its way to the general public and certainly requires an urgent discussion as to what needs to be improved in our healthcare system in order to prevent from similar occurrences from happening in the future. So the findings of that report, those findings from the inquiry really need to be put out, and Dr. Zhou was committed to making sure that it became public. And one of the things that was hotly discussed and debated last year mm-hmm. was that the issue of decriminalization of drug use mm-hmm. was quite prominent in the way that Dr. Zhou led on this issue. He not only led the charge on wanting to decriminalize drug use, but he also looked at enforcing the no-smoking ban in eateries and public spaces. Mm-hmm. Both are issues which came at a tremendous cost of strong opposition from conservatives and pro-smoking groups. So these are issues that I think when you consider is just some of the items that was on his to-do list, and he was able to make some headway in pushing towards reforms and improvements in how we look at these issues.
One could argue that ministers do come and go, and that it is the the machinery that implements these policies. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, at the end of the day, the Ministry of Health is run and managed by healthcare professionals and skilled workers. We're looking at from the cleaners all the way up to the frontline healthcare providers, doctors, the pharmacists at the clinic, kesihatan, and hospitals, to the senior management in Putrajaya. So we can trust them to do their jobs and duty irrespective of who is in the driver's seat at the Ministry of Health. Mm-hmm. We have good people and they are managing the day-to-day operations of the Ministry of Health and, most importantly, delivering on the services that are under the Malaysian healthcare system.
With regard to these specific reforms that you listed out, what could be the worst case scenario? Would we potentially see them being rolled back?
Well, one of the things that we're quite worried about is that because many of these initiatives and reforms required a tremendous amount of political will, but also political capital in order for them to be carried forward, proposed, much less carried forward, mm-hmm. The next person will have a heavy burden of deciding whether or not this is something that they would want to take on. I mean, I certainly look at the reforms that was introduced by Dr. Zhou on the issue of deregulating private medical practitioners' consultation fees, for example, mm-hmm. which was agreed to by the Cabinet mm-hmm. Last year and needs to have ensured to be carried through for the purposes of the benefit of the private practitioners. So even conversations concerning the autonomy for health in Sabah and Sarawak, mm-hmm. it requires there to be a commitment by the government in order for these conversations and reforms to be able to be not only proposed, but tabled and implemented throughout.
Mm. It really depends what stages each of these conversations are at as well.
No, definitely. Mm. And it's one of the issues that is coming to the forefront, especially with the current turmoil, is that many of these reforms were either at the formative stage or even up to the implementation stage. So a lot of these reforms require for there to be sustainable commitment to ensure that they're able to be carried out. And with this kind of disruption that has occurred in the political space, we are very much worried that it may not be able to be carried through. And reforms such as the deregulating of the fees would require a certain amount of commitment to be made.
Mm.
So we have things, for example, like the poisons bill, which is still currently in under consultation after being withdrawn temporarily from being tabled last year, requires a tremendous amount of consultation with different stakeholders. So it's an ongoing process that requires there to be engagement, commitment, and political will, which we are concerned that the next Minister of Health, whoever she or he may be, may not be able to carry the same amount of weight and strength as what Dr. Zoll brought to the table. At the end of the day, the reality is that Dr. Zoll raised the standard of how we should look at many of these issues, especially on how we engage stakeholders.
Mm.
He was a firm believer, he is a firm believer, of public-private partnerships. And though he was criticized at the very beginning that there was very little consultation in many of the initiatives that we put forward, he responded positively by increasing the level of consultation, but also trying to ensure that the concerns from the different stakeholders were being met. One of the more positive experiences that patients and community groups have actually told me about Dr. Zoll as the Minister of Health was that he told them that he was always open to meeting with these groups because he felt strongly in ensuring that they were heard, but also their needs were being met. So that's quite positive when you look at it from him being a Minister of Health, meeting with patients and so forth.
You know, especially as we are facing the COVID-19 outbreak now, and, you know, leadership is critical with these kinds of emergencies that very much affect public safety and health. What would you say is at stake for our public health response to this outbreak without somebody in the driver's seat?
You know, at the end of the day, Malaysia's decades-long investment in building public and private health care structures and systems is actually paying off. Malaysia has received recognition most recently from The Economist, looking at how the country is able to respond to infectious disease outbreaks and is considered one of the best in the region. And this is demonstrating itself in the way we're managing COVID-19 right now. And the reality is that today, despite the fact that there is no Minister of Health yet or the Deputy Minister of Health, we have leadership in both the public and private healthcare systems in Malaysia. And they are ensuring that, from a professional standpoint, that they're able to ensure that Malaysia is able to manage the response to COVID-19. So when it comes to the ongoing disease outbreak, I'm not that worried about whether or not we can respond to this disease, because we have all the structures and people in place who are able to do a professional job in being able to protect Malaysians from this disease.
So that was Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, and he was giving us a breakdown of what the potential change in political leadership would signal for the Ministry of Health, especially when it comes to much-needed health reforms in the country.
And so Chief Secretary to the Government, Mohamad Zuki Ali, has said that he is meeting with chief secretaries of the ministries to ensure that services continue as usual for continuity and for the implementation of existing policies for the people and country. You know, so for now, at least, we hope that the government machinery keeps running.
Right, so that's all for this story, but we do have one more coming up in this hour related to, of course, political developments that are happening in the country now. If you want to share any thoughts with us, tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.